Hi, I'm Marion McPartland. My guest today on Piano Jazz is Pulitzer Prize-winning lyricist and composer Stephen Sondheim, whose work has challenged and delighted audiences on Broadway and around the world for more than 35 years. And still going on, I would say, Steve.
You know, it's a long time, hey?
It does seem like a long time.
Yes, 35, my gosh. You're right.
But I don't know. It's gone so fast. I mean, I remember going to see one of your shows, A Little Night Music, and it just seems like yesterday, though.
It was 1973, but here it is, 21 years later.
21 years later.
Yeah.
Well, of course, I'm dying to pop the question about the new show that you're working on, what it's called and everything, everything. Tell me.
Okay, well, it's called Passion, and it's based on a novel of 1869. It's never been translated in English, published in Italy, written by a man named Tarchetti, who died at a very early age. And it was called Fosca, F-O-S-C-A, which is what we wanted to call it, but unfortunately it sounds too much like Tosca, and so we had no choice.
Yeah.
It was made into a wonderful movie, which is how I became aware of it. It was released in 1981, and I saw it at the film festival here, which is called Passione d'Amore, directed by Ettore Scola. And I've only twice in my life, or at least in my professional life, since West Side Story, I've only had two ideas that I just wanted to make into a musical. One was Sweeney Todd, which I saw at a little theater outside of London in a small production. And this, the minute I saw the movie, I wanted to make a musical of it.
Well, what's the storyline?
I don't sort of want to give it all away, but it's essentially a triangle. It's about a soldier in the Italian army who is stationed in Milan in 1869. He's very handsome, and he's having an affair with a very beautiful married woman. He gets posted to a frontier post north of Italy. The commandant has a cousin. They're only men on the post, except one woman. The commandant has a cousin who is in her late 20s and who you don't meet for a while, but who is who's a very clear offstage presence. And she's very strange. And they meet. And I think I will not tell you what happens.
I was just going to say, do you seem like you told a hell of a lot already?
It's very spooky. That's a setup. But anyway, it's about a man and two women.
Well, you know,
it's about a triangle.
I don't know if you feel like doing this already, but it sure would be great to hear something from the show.
Sure. The song is takes place about 45 minutes into the show. And it's a ballad. And I should warn you before I play this that I don't always sing on pitch, and I sometimes play in the cracks. But I have to have the music in front of me. So if you hear a page turn, you'll hear a page turn. So I'll
read from
to
hear it.
I'll try.
I wish I could forget you, erase you from my mind. But ever since I met you, I find I cannot leave the thought of you behind. That doesn't mean I love you. I wish that I could love you. I know that I've upset you. I know I've been unkind. I wanted you to vanish from sight, but now I see you in a different light. And though I cannot love you, I wish that I could love you.
You started your career writing with these great people, Julie Stein and
I started as a lyric writer. That's because Oscar was a lyric writer.
And Richard Rodgers.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, you obviously were so wonderful to be living there or being like a surrogate son for Oscar Hammerstein. I mean, that really got you off to a good...
Well, it was wonderful because I learned from him techniques of writing lyrics and structure of plays, the structure of scenes, structure of song. And then the first composer I worked with outside of my own music was Leonard Bernstein. And from him, learned a whole other way of thinking about music, you know. I tend to be kind of square in terms of like a bar structure, and you know, 4/4, 4/4. In fact, when I worked with Richard Rodgers, it was a shock because I would give him a sketch and sometimes sketch out the rhythm of the music, and the first thing he would do before looking at the rhythm is count the bars and be sure they were divisible by 4.
Well, now Leonard Bernstein.
See, and from Lenny, you're lucky if you can divide it by 7, you know, because that's the whole point, is to keep the listener surprised. And I learned that from him, and I think it doesn't necessarily make for big hit songs, and certainly Lenny wrote some standard form songs.
Well, you have never worried about writing big hit songs.
No, because I grew up in an era, luckily, where actually, Rodgers and Hammerstein, who had all those hits, they're the ones who killed that whole thing. And then rock came in. And when rock and pop came in the 50s, A, no subject matter was any more taboo. And secondly, Broadway was no longer the fount of pop songs. So you could do anything you wanted because you didn't have to care about it anymore. The number of hit songs that have come from Broadway in the last 20 years, you can count on one hand. And so you don't have to worry about it.
Oh,
now,
boy.
It doesn't make for hits, but on the other hand, it totally releases you. And I don't have to worry about it. I do remember, however, when I was writing Gypsy with Julie Stein, and I wrote a song, wrote a lyric called Small World, and had a line in it, you're a man who likes children, that's an important sign. Funny, I'm a woman with children. And Julie said, but that means only a woman can sing it. In other words, even though he was certainly as concerned as we were that the song should fit, we being Arthur Lawrence, who wrote the book, and I, even though he was as concerned as we were that the song should fit the situation and fit the character, he wanted to be sure it had a pop possibility. Well, that was late 50s. I don't think come mid-60s anybody cared about that anymore.
Oh, I'm sure they don't.
Because it doesn't do you any good. Songs for the last 30 years have been created by the artists who write them and sing them.
Well, one of your nicest songs, for me anyway, one of your loveliest songs was one from Anyone Can Whistle. Now, that was
an experimental show that ran only 9 performances.
Really?
Yeah. Could I ask you to play it?
I've never played it in public.
I wouldn't mind, if you don't mind doing it for radio audience.
I'd love to do it.
Please.
Okay.
I had a feeling you knew it.
Well, here goes.
Thank you.
Well, you know, there's some lovely things from Merrily We Roll Along. How did that, what?
That was enough for you. We're going to do that again. That's coming up very soon. We're doing another production at the York Theater. And George Firth, who wrote the book, and I have rewritten it 3 times, not entirely, mostly in the first 20 minutes. And I also added some. We did it was a failure on Broadway. It was cast wrong. We had a notion, Hal Prince and I, to cast it with kids, because it's a story that goes backwards in time and takes very successful 40-year-old people and brings them back to their idealistic roots at the age of 18. And we thought, wouldn't it be a terrific idea to cast it with 18-year-olds, so they become realer and realer as the evening went on. When it was originally done as a straight play, written by Kaufman and Hart in the early 30s, it was done by actors, you know, around the age of 30 who both acted older and acted younger. It was a mistake to do it this way because there was a kind of, and it was deliberate, a kind of amateur feeling about the show. Hal wanted the thing to feel like something put on in a school gym. And I think that would have been okay if you'd done it off-Broadway, but on Broadway, it just didn't seem right. And there were some other problems with the show, but I liked the show very much. And although it was a resounding failure, we got a terrific record out of it.
Did that song, Not a Day Goes By, was that sort of... That's a gorgeous song. Oh. I mean, I'd love to try and play it.
I'd love to hear you try that.
I'm going to try that.
I like that a lot. It's interesting because I think the listeners should know you and I didn't consult about which songs you should do. I just came into the studio today, and the ones you pick are the ones I like.
Oh, really?
So our tastes are similar. That's very nice.
I just tend to love romantic ballads and unrequited love.
That's what this is.
And all those things.
That's exactly what this is.
Let's see. What else? Oh.
Carly Simon made a very nice record of this.
That's what I heard. I heard that in the car not so long ago. And actually, I had not heard anybody do it, and it absolutely stopped me cold. I almost pulled over to the side of the road. It's just a beautiful song. And I mean, the title, everything, it just really tells you everything. Not a day goes by.
That's good, yes.
So, here goes. To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from Save America's Treasures, a partnership between the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Parks Service, Department of the Interior, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.